Joins me to recount her experiences. Former BBC Middle East correspondent Tim Franks supplies the political context, and John Adams and his librettist Alice Goodman offer their own responses to the opera's reception. Join me, Andrew McGregor, for The Death of Klinghoffer, this evening's Opera on Three at 6, and hear for yourself why, over a quarter of a century after the hijacking, the opera still divides opinion.
And that's here on BBC Radio 3. We're on 90 to 93 FM, on digital radio and also online. It's just after 1 o'clock, time now for the news with David Cornett.
The Greek socialist leader Evangelos Venizelos has formally told the president that he can't form a government. He's the third party leader to have failed to put an administration together. Attempts will now be made by the president to form an emergency government of national unity. A 34-year-old woman has been remanded in custody, charged with murdering her two children in southwest London. Felicia Boots is accused of killing her 14-month-old daughter and her 10-week-old son. It's been reported that Greater Manchester Police have made further arrests relating to the sexual grooming of girls in Rochdale. According to the Manchester Evening News, several men have been detained on suspicion of sexually abusing the same girl. Earlier this week, 9 men from Rochdale and Oldham were jailed for a string of offences against girls, some as young as 13. A special church service has been held in memory of 5 children who died in a house fire in Derby yesterday. Police are continuing to question a 38-year-old man and 28-year-old woman on suspicion of murder. A teenage boy who was rescued from the blaze is still in a critical condition in a specialist burns unit. The Venezuelan president, Hugo Chavez, has returned home following 11 days of cancer treatment in Cuba. He hugged ministers on the runway in Caracas and burst into song. He's planning to stand for re-election in October. 2 men who were arrested yesterday in Gloucestershire have been rearrested under the Terrorism Act. The police acted after materials were found at a garage in Cheltenham. A steam train is retracing the journey of a British military train which ran daily from West Germany through East Germany for 40 years. It was regarded as a way of asserting the British right to have a presence in West Berlin, as agreed by the Soviets after the war. And the weather, mainly dry, with plenty of sunshine across the UK, becoming cloudier and windier in northwest Scotland later, with a chance of rain. BBC News and weather at 1:03.
Read by David Cornett. I'm Jill Anderson. Very good afternoon to you. Looking ahead to 2 o'clock, we'll be hearing a piano recital given by Leon McCauley. He'll be playing 2 Chopin nocturnes, Debussy's Pour le Piano and Schumann's Carnival. But now here's Catherine Bott to delve into the music of the past in today's Early Music Show.
Thank you. The King's Singers, with a setting of words from Psalm 6 by the Dutch composer Jan Pieterszoon Sweelinck, renowned organist and a hugely influential teacher. He's probably best remembered for his keyboard compositions, but in today's early music show, in the month of the 450th anniversary of his birth, I'm going to explore his vocal music. There's a lot of it. More than 250 pieces survive, including chansons, madrigals, motets and psalms. Two moderately important facts about Sweelinck's output for singers. Most of it's in five parts, and none of it's in Dutch. Take this next piece, for example, from his 1612 collection called French and Italian Rhymes. This is the story of Rosette, a flighty shepherdess whose amorous swain has got her number. He's anticipated her infidelity by lining up a new love for himself and reckons he's got the best of the deal, saying, "Let's see which of us will be the first to repent." A bittersweet story turned into tender, thoughtful song by Sweelinck.
Dieu que vous êtes mensongère, maudit, maudit, maudit.
The Gesualdo Consort, directed by Harry van der Kamp, singing Sphalinx Rosette. There'll be quite a lot more of the Gesualdo Consort in today's programme, from their outstanding 3-CD set of the complete vocal works of this underrated composer, well worth not just a listen, but a good read of the booklet. The anthology is called The Sphalinx Monument, and it's the first such collection on CD. As Harry van der Kamp writes, the Netherlands may be proud of its greatest sons, but it does not always succeed in keeping them in respectful remembrance. Sphalinx was probably destined for a career in church music from a very early age. He was the son, nephew and grandson of organists. He succeeded his father, and was in turn succeeded by his own son, as organist of the Oude Kerk in Amsterdam, the family's tenure of the post lasting more than 100 years. If you visited the Oude Kerk, the old church, you'll remember the light coming through the many windows or the high-vaulted wooden roof. Rembrandt's children were christened there, Sphalinx himself is buried there, and the acoustics of the church are wonderful for concerts. It was consecrated in the year 1306, some considerable time before Amsterdam's famous red light district came to nestle all around. And until the Dutch Reformation of 1578, it was a Catholic place of worship. It's believed that young Sphalinx may have become organist of the church the year before that, when he was just 15 years old. He'd been brought up a Catholic, but his job description as organist of the Oude Kerk was to be very different from that of his father. With the Calvinist Reformed Church now in charge, there would be no more music in church services, and he was employed not by the church, but by the city magistrates. He was, in fact, a civil servant. So as well as not being required to play for services, he was also not required to compose any music. His contract hasn't survived, but his job was probably pretty similar to those in other important Dutch cities, so he will have been required to play twice daily, morning and evening, before or after services. His virtuosity and skill at improvising brought him the unofficial title the Orpheus of Amsterdam. Sphalinx must have been keenly aware that in the south of the country things were different, and there was still employment for musicians and composers in church and at court. Throughout his life, he seems never to have left Amsterdam for longer than a few days, but he composed a wealth of material. So for whom was he writing? I'll tell you more about that after some more music. Here's the Gesualdo consort again with a chanson, once again in French, which is a cry for help. Sorrow, cares and pain have taken their toll of me. If help does not arrive, my life will be over. She whom I love gives me no help at all. The Gesualdo consort with added viols in an arrangement of Sweelinck's chanson Regret, Souci et Peine. Sweelinck was the only composer from the North Netherlands to write in this style. His first publications were of chansons, with a first collection coming out in 1594. Here are two numbers from that collection, Si j'aime ou non, and first, a setting of a passionate, sensual lyric, Bouche de chorale précieux. Precious coral mouth made for kissing. I have so many questions, but don't answer them. Just kiss me.
Thank you.
Whether I love or no, I will keep mum. Let everyone think what he likes. My eye has learned to follow where the heart is pointing. Si j'aime ou non, and before it, Bouche de Chorale Précieux by Svelink, sung by the Gesualdo Consort, directed by Harry van der Kamp. I said at the beginning of the programme that Svelink never set a text in his native language. Why was this? Well, there's one possible reason that was pointed out to me many years ago when I was lucky enough to be seated next to the Dutch soprano Ellie Ameling at dinner. Like most great artists, she was modest, humorous and down-to-earth, and at the end of the meal she turned to me and said, "Catherine, I have a very important piece of professional advice for you." With a very serious expression, she said in perfectly pronounced English, "Never sing in Dutch. It's horrible." And as it happens, I never have. I hope that listeners in Holland will forgive my telling that story. I mean no disrespect to a vigorous and expressive language. The most likely reasons for Svelink's avoidance of his native tongue are, firstly, a shortage of suitable vernacular texts, and there was no tradition of translating foreign literature into Dutch. Secondly, to answer my earlier question of whom he was writing for, demand for his music came largely from the wealthy amateurs of Amsterdam, for whom the French language in particular had considerable cachet.
Thank you.
Harry van der Kamp directing the Gesualdo Consort in passionate love songs and lute music by Sweelinck. Mon Dieu que j'aime ma déesse and Tes beaux yeux, separated by a volta played by Lee Santana. All originally written for, not secret, but certainly private, domestic performance in restrained Calvinist Amsterdam. You're listening to The Early Music Show with me, Catherine Bott. When Svelink was a boy, watching his father at work in the old church, he must have seen some picturesque sights, and some sad ones too. The church was more than a place of worship. It was a popular place to go for a good old gossip, and peddlers hawked their wares. Above all, the Oude Kerk provided sanctuary and shelter for down-and-outs and beggars. But when the Calvinists took over the running of the city, they were having none of that. If they'd gone in for slogans and buzzwords, they'd have proclaimed that church cleanliness was next to godliness. Post-Reformation churches were to be places of austerity above all. Decades after Svelink's death, the choir was closed off with a brass screen, above which worshippers could read this text. The false practices gradually introduced into God's church were here undone again in the year 78, referring to 1578, the year of the Dutch Reformation. In this austere climate, Svelink had no opportunity to write sacred music for public airing in church. Instead, he wrote devotional works for intimate gatherings in private houses, rather as William Byrd did for Catholic recusants in England. Svelink's polyphonic settings of the Geneva Psalter were emphatically Protestant, but once again using the fashionable French language. They were his life's work, really, appearing in collections over several decades. And although I made the comparison with Byrd and recusancy, the climate was far more relaxed in Amsterdam. Svelink's first book of Psalms was dedicated to the city's burgomaster and alderman, and the second to some Calvinist merchants who were probably members of the group of nurslings, disciples, advocates and amateurs of sweet and holy music, of which he was the leader. There's nothing very modern in Svelink's psalm settings, no sign of the new musical language that was breaking through in Italy. But these small masterpieces in French play a significant role in the culmination of 2 centuries of Renaissance polyphony. We're going to hear 2 of them now. Psalm 33, Rejoice in the Lord, O you righteous, sung by Capella Amsterdam, directed by Daniel Royce, and Psalm 42, As the heart panteth after the water brooks, so panteth my soul after thee, O God, sung by the Netherlands Chamber Choir under Jan Boeke.
Thank you.
psalm settings by Svelink, music that will have pleased his Calvinist masters. But they weren't the only sacred works to come from his pen. His Canciones Sacrae of 1619, 2 years before he died, contains 37 motets on texts from Catholic liturgy, which raises the question of Svelink's own religious beliefs. As I said, he was a cradle Catholic who was obliged to convert to the new doctrine after 1578. Whether or not he stuck with Calvinism is still being discussed by historians of the period. At the very least, he remained sympathetic to his first faith, and there were no religious zealots on either side among his circle of friends. Tolerance was the prevailing word, as it still is in Holland. The Canciones Sacrae were dedicated to his Catholic friend and pupil, Cornelis Plemp, and for this late collection he dared to set Latin texts. For our last music today, the words are from Psalm 130, De Profundis Clamavi ad Te, Out of the depths have I cried unto thee, O Lord.
Thank you.
Trinity College Chapel Choir, Cambridge, directed by Richard Marlowe, singing Sphalanx Latin setting of Psalm 130. Apart from the vocal music in today's programme, Sphalanx is remembered for his keyboard works, of course. What we can't convey in a modern radio programme are his extraordinary gifts as a teacher, which made him famous throughout Northern Europe. His pupils were seen as musicians against whom other organists should be measured. They include Scheidt and Pretorius, as well as many whose fame hasn't lasted. In 1943, a limestone statue of Sphalanx was unveiled in Amsterdam. It lasted until the liberation, when it was defaced, as collateral damage, really, by an angry mob protesting about the spineless behaviour of the city's wartime mayor and council. It was hidden away and eventually broken up into rubble. As with so many great musicians, Sphalanx's monument is made in music rather than limestone. Happy 450th birthday to the Orpheus of Amsterdam.
Catherine Bott. And you'll be able to download a podcast version of that programme from next Monday. Just go to the Radio 3 website and follow the links to the Early Music Show pages. In tomorrow's programme, Lucy Skeeping explores Rameau's multifaceted music for solo keyboard. And that's at the same time, just after the 1 o'clock news here on Radio 3. And talking about keyboards, in an hour's time at 3 o'clock in Saturday Classics, the pianist Catherine Stott shares a selection of music connected with one of her lifelong passions, the music and musicians of France. That's Saturday Classics at 3 o'clock today.
Radio 3 live in concert at Valery Gergiev's Stravinsky Festival. We've a front row seat at London's Barbican as Gergiev and the London Symphony Orchestra perform The Rite of Spring and Oedipus Rex. From classical music's biggest scandal to a Sophocles tragedy, an all Stravinsky performance in Radio 3 live in concert. Tuesday night at 7:30 on BBC Radio 3.
The time now is 2 o'clock, and there's a second chance to hear last Monday's Radio 3 lunchtime concert from Wigmore Hall in London, which was given as part of our Radio 3 Portraits Day. It was introduced by Catherine Bott.
Welcome to Wigmore Hall. As we continue Portraits Day here on Radio 3, we've some more musical portraits. Two nocturnes by Chopin, Debussy's Suite pour le piano, and Schumann's Carnival, played by pianist Leon McCauley. A portrait in music can be a vivid illustration of the subject's character, crammed with affectionate and telling details. But sometimes listeners are given much less to go on and have to infer what they can or will from the name of the composer's dedicatee. The two Chopin nocturnes that begin Leon McCauley's live recital are a case in point. The nocturne is an essentially private piece, one of atmosphere rather than description, and fits in neatly with the cult of Chopin that began at his Paris debut in 1832, a cult that was enhanced by his apparent reluctance to play in public. He loved teaching, though, and dedicated each of the nocturnes that we'll hear now to a female pupil. Opus 48, number 1, is the first of a pair written for Laure Duperré, and Opus 62, number 2, is also one of a pair, this time dedicated to Mademoiselle R. de Könneritz. No name, just an initial. Presumably, both ladies were pleased to see their names in print, and it's through Chopin's dedications that they're remembered today. So, to begin his programme with two nocturnes by Chopin, we welcome Leon McCauley.